Hello, my name is Ogenetra Donald-Ekeki. I'm a speculative fiction writer, editor, and publisher from Nigeria.
This is a continuing episode of a series with Ogenetra Donald-Ekeki, African spec fic writer, editor, and publisher.
Reading from the introduction of the book, Introduction to Afropantheology, by Ogenetra Donald-Ekeki and Joshua Uchenna-Omenga, African cosmologies recognize two spheres of existence, the physical and the spiritual, between which there is an inseparable link, as well as constant interactions. Each sphere of existence is connected to the other, the living to the dead, the born to the unborn, humans to the deities. A community develops its mode of relating to its ancestors and the gods, harmonizing the interconnectedness of everything. According to Dr. Casey Nweke, each community has its spiritual exclusiveness through its relatedness to the ancestors in the underworld, who oversee the ephemeral world. Today, many works of African fiction reflecting African cosmology are themselves fictional reflections of these African realities. Yet, this can make it easy to mislabel such literary fiction as mere fantasy. The genre of fantasy, part of the broader category of speculative fiction, can simply mean imaginative fictions involving outlandish characters, magical elements, and often set in created worlds. It's often a genre of escapist literature in which readers must suspend their belief to enjoy. As such, fantasy can be an ill-fitting term when describing many literary works of similar rendering from the African continent. In response, a new term was conceived to capture this gamut of African literary works, which, though having fantasy elements, are additionally imbued with the African spiritual realities, Afropantheology. The stories envisaged under this label, Afropantheology, are primordial African stories inherited from priests and lawkeepers who were in communication with the deities and the spirit world. Thus, the stories were viewed by their purveyors mostly as histories rather than as fiction. What may more correctly pass for the African literary equivalent to fantasy are the folklores, which are creatures and heroes meant to entertain and sometimes instruct. The stories of Afropantheology are not just folklores, but fictional renderings of the histories passed down from the keepers of African culture and laws. It is necessary that these stories be recognized for what they represent. So what does the new term Afropantheology mean? First, it is a portmanteau of Afro and Pantheology. Pantheology is the study of gods, religions, and bodies of knowledge associated with them. Derivatively, Afropantheology is the study of African and African-descended religions, gods, and bodies of knowledge associated with them. It's a term to solve the old-age problem of accurate and respectful labeling of stories based on African law and religion. They are not mere fantasies. Neither do such labels as God Punk serve entirely to clothe these works as skin do bones. But these stories stretch beyond just showing the gods. Why then the creation of a new term, Afropantheology? Because it does not suffice to merely insist that these stories are the realities of the African cosmology, especially in this era when only the scientific is believed to be factual. Instead, it is because these stories, deriving though they are from African lore, are not wholly imaginative. Is revelation in the Bible a work of fantasy? If one believes that it stemmed wholly from the imaginations of John the Apostle as he sat on the island of Patmos, then perhaps. But not if one believes that John wrote what was revealed to him by God or his delegates. So too, the stories of Afropan theology. They are fantasy only insofar as the channels of their passage are dismissed. This unfortunately has been done for centuries now, when the continent's jugular was slashed with the swords of slavery and colonialism, and its history and culture and stories poured into the arid sands of theft and erasure. But not anymore. Afropan theology has been born to cauterize that wound and awards to sink to life what was lost and sift the sand for the true black gold that lies amid the bones of our ancestors. I'll stop there. So I'll be reading from The Pet of Olodumare. It's a short story by Joshua Chen Almenga. I'm not going to try doing all the talking myself. So I'll be diving in now. It was said in the law of Orisha that in the beginning of time, Olodumare existed alone in the vast uncreated universe. But as time passed, Olodumare became lonely and yearned for company. He then created a pet, which he named Olutundumare. And the pet kept him company and brought him comfort from the weariness of primal existence. But after 86,000 years, Olodumare desired the company of beings in his own likeness. So he created the 401 Orishas, or deities, and they lived with him in Oron, the abode of the gods. But as the Orishas were unlike the pet Olutundumare, which did whatever Olodumare willed it to do, being much like himself, the Orishas found it hard to offer devotion to Olodumare, and Olodumare soon wearied of their pretended fealty. Therefore, Olodumare decided to create another being less sublime than the Orishas, but as compliant as his pet, Olodumare. But being too grand to create imperfect beings, Olodumare decided to entrust the task to an Orisha, deeming that an Orisha could only create something less than itself. He decided to select an Orisha for the task by assigning them different duties and observing them as they went about it. It was not long before Olodumare singled out Obatala from the other Orishas, for Obatala was focused and always worked alone, not resting until his tasks were done. He was the most noble-minded among his peers and carried himself without pride, except for the pride in his purity. He went quietly about his affairs, dressed in white and carrying with him a god of water to wash away any impurities that touched his person. Olodumare was satisfied with what he saw in Obatala and summoned him. Obatala arrived in his flowing white robe and prostrated himself flat on the ground before Olodumare and said, "Lord of Oru, may you wear your royal crown forever." "Rise," Olodumare said, waving his fly whisk at Obatala. Obatala rose accordingly. "I have a task with which only one of spotless reputation can be entrusted," Olodumare continued. "I have looked for such a one in Oru, and today I recognize your untarnished reputation among the Orishas. Your eyes are perfect, your fingers are steady, your muscles are strong, and your mind is healthy. Therefore, I entrust to you the task of fashioning the human body from the clay." Obatala bowed, and Olodumare waved his fly whisk of blessing over him. "I grant you the dexterity of fingers and the art of balance, so that the human bodies you create may stand out among other non-celestial beings." Then Olodumare handed the covered basket to Obatala and said to him, "In this basket dwells the spirit of artistry and wisdom. It kept me company during the creation of the universe. I give it to you to keep you company while you fashion the human body. Its presence shall endow you with the talent of artistry. But do not open it, and do not let anyone else open it." Obatala accepted the basket, bowed to Olodumare, and departed to do the task entrusted to him. But yeah, I'll start there.
All right, very good. A really, you know, clear picture of the storytelling. So that's really cool. Yeah, I don't know if you read urban fantasy, but it kind of reminds me of that style of, except it's in Africa, is the difference.
Sci-Fi Thoughts wants to expand. We want to grow from not just your podcast player, but to spread to your coworkers, your family, and your friends.
But I haven't got any friends.
Why, you little... One, two, three. Oh, no, you don't. We know you've got friends who are into the science, who are into science fiction. These are the people who are playing Halo and Stellaris and other space games instead of watching college football. There are the ones in the NASA t-shirts who are busy inventing something with their 3D printers. Email them a link to this podcast. Send them a social media request. Heck, even speak to them and tell them that you've enjoyed the show. The main point is to impress upon them how much you enjoy Sci-Fi Thoughts. Tell them to go to the URL scifithoughts.space. Don't keep Sci-Fi Thoughts secret, because keeping secrets from science fiction fans just isn't nice.
Check out the show notes. We have yummy, goody things in there for you to follow up on, like where to learn more about Ogonachawi Donald Epeki, such as his homepage and where to get his African speculative fiction. What are show notes? Show notes show up right in your podcast player if you use one to listen to these words. If you downloaded this episode from a website, go back to the website where you downloaded the MP3, and there you will see the show notes there. Next episode, more Ogonachawi Donald Epeki.
And they would only pick us up at the close of day when they were back from work. So we basically lived in the library. We had nothing to do but books. So we read everything. You know, we read all the fiction books the library had to offer. And nice. A lot of people had those books, you know. At some point, one of my brothers, after reading all the fiction books, he moved on to non-fiction and he read all the non-fiction books. Then when he was done, he went to the encyclopedias. They were volume 1 to, you know, volume 20. And he read them cover to cover. I mean, that fellow has way more damage than I do right now.
Awesome. Wow. That's a hot tip for you parents out there, is leave your kids in the library and then they'll have to read something. So I love that.
Yeah.